This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 20th day of January 2016, Wednesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Chip Nellinger. He's at Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. And then a bit later in the program, we'll take a look at the agricultural news and hear from Daryl Good about last week's USDA winter wheat seedings and what prospects it might put forth for the coming prospective plantings report. That's due out at the end of the month of March. And we'll do that right here on this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I hear what the numbers look like in Chicago at this hour. Futures in the corn pit finished up. In fact, they settled higher, one higher in the nearby March at 368 3/4, the May at 373 1/4, up a penny and a quarter, and July corn at 378 1/2, up 1.5 cents. December futures up one at 390 1/2. From the soy complex, March beans down 9.5 cents at the end of the day, $8.74 the settlement price. May futures at 874 3/4, down 8 1/4, and July 8 cents lower at $8.80. November beans of next year at $8.82 1/4, down 6 1/4. Bean meal futures in the March at 269.80, down $1.50, and the bean oil at 29.81, down 22. Soft red winter wheat 3 cents lower at 471 1/2 for the March. July down 3 3/4. That's the harvest month at $4.81 1/4. The hard red July at $4.87 1/4 in the wheat pit, down 5 1/4 cents. Live cattle futures $1.50 lower at $127.80. That's the current trade. April at $128.67 1/2, down $1.47 1/2. And January feeders down 55 cents at $156. The March at $151.17 1/2, down $1.10. Lean hogs for the day in the February at $62.92 1/2, up 7.5 cents. However, the April at $67.20 per 100 pounds, 52.5 cents lower. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what some of the outside markets look like. Ethanol for the day is 0.7 cents higher at $1.36 3/10 per gallon. And the gasoline on the gallon at $1.02 3/10 is 2.7 cents lower. Heating oil at 87 2/10 cents per gallon, down 3.5 cents. More in just a moment on Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Some of the other important numbers trading now. Crude oil in the February contract at $26.76 a barrel. That's $1.70 lower. It's been as low as $26.19. Natural gas at $2.118. That's up 2.7 cents. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 15,590. Recovered from its 500-point loss at 324 lower for the afternoon. The U.S. dollar is at 99.18. It's up 0.134, and gold futures on the day at $1,103.50, up $14.40. The S&P at 1839, that's down just about 33 points at this hour. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area the rest of the afternoon. Cloudy, a high of 22 degrees and a north wind at about 6 miles an hour. Mostly cloudy this evening, a low of 14, east winds at 3 to 5, and Thursday cloudy skies at 27-degree high. East winds tomorrow at 5 to 8 on Thursday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 19 degrees, northeast winds at 8 to 13, though gust all the way to 17, and then on Friday, cloudy skies will go to a high of 29 degrees. That north-northeast wind will continue at 13 to 16 miles an hour, gusting to 23 on Friday and into Friday afternoon. Cloudy skies gradually becoming partly cloudy on Friday evening will drop to a low of 20 with a north wind by then at 13 to 15, gusting to 21. And on Saturday, that north wind will bring us a sunny sky. It'll be clear, a high of 31 degrees with that wind at 8 to 11, gusting to 16 miles an hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
This is the January 20th edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Jackie Vakes is out of the office again this afternoon. Chip Nellinger is here. He's with Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. Thanks for joining us again this afternoon, Chip. Looks like we made it through the day. We talked this morning a lot about the financial markets and some of the problems that it may face. You thought we had 2 to 3 hours that we really had to weather, and looks like that was the case. Where do we stand this afternoon?
Yeah, well, since the time we talked this morning, it did get a lot worse. But fortunately, we had our fingers crossed here, and the stock market has put a pretty decent-sized rally in off the lows. So we're now almost 300 points off the lows from, about 1130-ish range here. So, you know, again, a lot of these gains came after our grain and livestock markets kind of settled here. So as long as we can kind of hold here and breathe a sigh of relief, I think that takes a little bit of the pressure off some of the things we saw on the grain and livestock side today, and can probably be talking about a little bit of a bounce tomorrow. But, you know, so far, breathing a sigh of relief, because we were in pretty fearful territory in the stock market earlier today.
Yeah, the corn pit actually performed really well throughout the day and finished even a penny higher. That surprise you at all?
A little bit. And I thought, given the outside markets, it was a phenomenal performance. I think part of it is the funds already have pretty healthy short position. You know, at one point here, not too many days ago, they were knocking on the door of a 200,000 contract short position. So they may be about as maxed out on the short side as they can be, and, you know, pretty decent close here. So I think we're kind of open to some short covering going forward from the funds to maybe give us a little more strength here. But, you know, all that is, I guess, kind of assuming that we can see some stability in the stock market, and particularly the Asian and Chinese stock markets overnight. I think that will go a long way towards easing some fears and maybe allowing our grain markets to bounce a little bit.
And that brings me to the soybeans. Is the difference between the gains in the corn pit today and the losses in the soybeans, the wider distribution of soybeans, and their exporting regions across the planet, meaning that they may be more susceptible to weaknesses in other economies?
Yeah, I think part of it is just the sheer supply we have as well. You know, we're just, 60 days or less from having a pretty healthy supply of new crop beans out of South America, particularly Brazil. So there's a big supply here. I think part of it was weaker crude oil prices early on, no real major threat in the forecast for Brazil. And so I think the beans were a little more susceptible to some of the financial market weakness. And like you said, some of this financial market weakness started in China. And obviously, when you talk about China, they don't really have much of an effect on our corn, but boy, they sure take a lot of our beans. So China matters when it comes to bean exports for us.
They take a lot of everybody's beans. Speaking of which, the South American soybean crop, that in Brazil in particular, has been under some stress for a while from the weather, though they've gotten some rainfall. The high numbers suggested 102 million metric tons. I've heard as low as 96, even 93 million metric tons. But where do you stand at this point on how large that Brazilian bean crop might be?
Well, as I throw my dart, and that's, you know, again, I've not been down there, don't have any context on it, but from a psychological standpoint, we started the process out so high. That bar was so high from day one on the size of their crop at 100 million metric tons. They've had some extremes, too. You know, in the south, way too much rain. In the north, very, very dry at times. Sure, there's areas that are pretty good, but with that extreme volatility in their weather, my brain tells me that I guess I wouldn't be shocked if they end up sub 100. I don't think it's a disaster, but if they end up anywhere in the 93, 94, 95 million metric ton mark, that should be enough to give the market a little bit of a shock and at least cause a little bit of a short covering bounce. So I think it's going to be important, probably one of the most important things to the bean market over the next 3-4 weeks, start getting some more private estimates out of Brazil. And if they are consistently coming in sub 100 million metric tons, I think we have a little bit of upside left in the beans here.
So you're near the river there. What do you think the basis looks like at this point? And how has the marketplace been reacting? I think corn is one under, maybe, or flat, one of the two, and soybeans are overs on the river at this point.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty amazing. I think that the river, though, is more of a follower to the processor market. So Decatur's been strong all along. You know, you just draw a diameter around 100 miles from Decatur, and there were a couple pockets of good, better-than-average yields, but there's a lot of poor crops there, too. And so I think the processor market is holding the river market together. And especially you get north of us here, north of Peoria, that new Marquis addition to their ethanol plant there. I don't have the exact number that came online here this month. They're grinding in the order of 250,000 bushels of corn a day. My understanding is it's 7 days a week, a lot of corn. So I think the processor market, the ethanol market, really is holding the river basis together. They have to, if they want any corn at all, they've got to compete with the processors.
And the processors indicator are 15 over for both corn and soybeans for the day. So really pushing the marketplace pretty high. Is this a place where producers should take advantage, whether it be in the corn or the soybean market? I'll see. I think Decatur's bids, what, 384 for corn and 8 and 911 for soybeans at this point?
Yeah, I think especially from a basis standpoint, absolutely. I think locking this basis in on corn makes sense and maybe waiting for a little bit of a bounce on the futures. The problem is if we rally futures 25, 30 cents from here on corn, they're going to back the basis off 10 to 12 plus cents. So yeah, absolutely, I think a producer can put some money in his pocket by rewarding the strong basis now and waiting for a little bit of a bounce in the futures to set those futures and put some dollars in your pocket. I think that there's more corn out there, net, more old crop corn hanging over us, and so that's going to be a bigger issue in the corn market. I don't get a sense there's as many old crop beans out here in farmers' hands, and that's generally the case. But absolutely, a strong basis at a minimum, I think you're in a time frame on the calendar where you can reward that.
Yeah, so if you lock in basis, what does it really mean? What have you done?
Well, you still have upside through the future. All you're doing at that point is waiting to price the futures point. So you lock the basis in. Now, it can backfire, too. You lock the basis in now and futures go lower. It's working against you. But oftentimes, and especially now for the next 90 days, say, futures price and basis in corn usually moves in inverse. In other words, if corn goes up a dime, you're going to see the basis back off 2 or 3 cents. So if we're in an area, and we are in many places, we have strong basis, a guy can lock that in right now and wait to set the futures price down the road. It just separates the cash price. The cash price is made of two variables. It's the basis and the futures price. And all you're doing by setting a basis contract is kind of separating those two issues out.
So essentially you're saying, I believe this is as tight or as close to as tight as the basis is going to get. And sometime in the future, I would like to sell my crop.
Exactly.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us for the afternoon.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Todd.
That, of course, is Chip Dellinger. He's with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, a delegation of lawmakers from the Midwest is urging the EPA not to fall behind again in putting out the next set of the nation's renewable fuels targets, or RFS. Iowa Republican Chuck Grassley describes the lesson he and other senators learned the last time around.
Weigh in early and never take for granted that the EPA understands this ethanol industry or biofuels industry and the great potential it has, a potential that's already been demonstrated over the last 2 or 3 decades.
Grassley's home state, Iowa delegation has signed a letter urging the EPA to set achievable high targets. The ethanol industry complains the 2016 conventional ethanol volume is a half a billion gallons under the 15 billion gallon statutory target. EPA Acting Assistant Administrator for Air and Radiation Janet McCabe argues Congress did not dictate a statutory limit, and its goals were ambitious based on unrealized expectations of fuel use and development. On that note, 3 POET-owned biorefineries will expand ethanol production capacity by about 25 million gallons this year. The biorefineries in Iowa, South Dakota, and Michigan each filed separate expansion permits within their respective states, and they'll soon be producing at the level their RIN or RIN permits allow. The expansions would increase POET Biorefinery's capabilities by more than 20 million gallons a year. POET President and CEO Jeff Lout said the industry is ready to give drivers even more opportunities to use clean-burning, American-made biofuels. POET set production records at 17 biorefineries last year. We'll stay with the agricultural industry. Syngenta shareholders say they do not approve of a Chem-China deal. While the two companies may be inching closer to an agreement, a group of Syngenta shareholders say they oppose the merger with Chem-China. The group, according to Bloomberg, told a Swiss newspaper that one can justifiably ask whether the board has really thought through the consequences of nationalizing Syngenta through a sale to a state-owned enterprise of a communist country. The group called for the ousting of the Swiss company's leadership at the next annual meeting. Syngenta chairman Michael Demer said last week Syngenta was in talks about a possible merger and was weighing several options, including a Chem-China and Monsanto deal. Reuters reported that Syngenta's board of directors voted in favor of pursuing advanced takeover talks with Chem-China last week. And finally, today in Washington, D.C., at the National Press Club, the Farm Foundation is hosting a forum on the issue of antibiotic use. Joe Swedberg, a retired executive from Hormel Foods and a chair of the Project Advisory Committee, says the forum is the culmination of 12 workshops around the country.
The purpose of it was really provide everybody the proper information that they needed in order to implement these new guidelines, which will take place in January 1st, 2017. And we picked 12 different geographic areas in the country, tried to look at where the underserved areas were. We wanted to make sure that everybody understood their role, since it's a voluntary program and it's an opportunity for the industry and everybody involved, from the pharmaceuticals also, to show a voluntary program can work and make some progress in the direction of the concerns around antimicrobial resistance.
Swedberg says there are different perspectives about the new veterinary feed directive among veterinarians and producers, so relationships will be critical. Today's forum precedes a national summit entitled Antimicrobial Stewardship Policy, Education, and Economics Forum. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. USDA's winter wheat seedings report showed a lot fewer acres were sown last fall than most had expected. In a moment, we'll hear a review of the report and its potential consequences for corn and soybean acres across the nation. Farmers in the U.S. are believed to have planted about 36.6 million acres of wheat last fall. It's nearly 2.3 million acres less than the year earlier, and the second smallest number of wheat acres in the United States since 1913, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Daryl Good. And he says it's where those acres are missing, and not missing for that matter, that will make a difference for corn and soybean farmers in the coming year. Nebraska farmers planted a record low number of hard red winter wheat acres, while farmers in the rest of the Corn Belt states actually increased winter wheat seedings. First, here's what Good thinks this will mean for the size of this year's winter wheat crop, and then we'll look forward to other crops.
Assuming that winter wheat seedings are actually near the January estimate, that 80.6% of the planted acreage is harvested, and the average yield is near the trend value, the 2016 crop would total 1.387 billion bushels. production at that level would be 17 million bushels larger than the 2015 crop.
Obviously, actual production could differ substantially from the projected level based on current calculations. The biggest factor, says Darrell Good, will be weather conditions.
There is always uncertainty about weather conditions, but expectations that the strong El Nino event will diminish into the spring of the year increases the level of uncertainty. Based on similar conditions historically, the greater risk for unfavorable weather conditions appears to be for the summer months after the winter wheat crop is harvested. The next estimate of winter wheat seedings will come with the USDA's March 31 Prospective Plantings Report.
The Prospective Plantings Report will provide important information for spring-planted crops. The sharp decline in winter wheat seedings has stirred some debate about how planting decisions for spring crops like corn and soybeans will be influenced if prices remain low. Some argue the decline in winter wheat seedings is an indication producers are just going to idle acreage for this year. Others suggest the winter wheat acreage reduction opens the door for increased acreage of spring-planted crops. Darrell Good, for his part, says he'll take up the possibilities and provide some analysis in the future on the potential acreage in 2016. That'll happen on the Farm Doc Daily website. You may watch for it there at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Pete Peterson is here. He's from the Anderson's Climbers facility out of Logansport, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Pete. How are you today?
Great.
How's the market there for corn feeding the ethanol plant?
We're not bad. Right now we're about 22 over, a little better for February. Right now it's, you know, with the ethanol margins, not the world's best. Still a good basis out there, but... You know, right now the 30-day window is probably all the farther we look out.
Yeah, so many of our analysts have been telling producers to lock in basis, sometimes for corn and soybeans both. What does that mean from the Anderson's facility there when you lock in a basis?
It basically, you protect yourself on one of the two variables you have with the futures versus the basis. You're locking in the basis side, and that way it gives you good protection. So if the market does take an upward swing, you could take advantage of it. You know, obviously, if you take a downward spiral, you'll probably see better basis levels. But still, these are very non-historical basis levels at this point.
Is there a cost?
No cost at all. So that's an attractive part of it.
And do you give up anything, for instance? Do you give up, do you have to sign the crop over when you lock in the basis?
It's just a normal grain contract. You commit the bushels, and we lock in the basis for those amount of bushels. And, you know, once you deliver, you obviously lose ownership, but you still have the pricing opportunity still open.
And do you pay them a part of what would be owed in the future?
Correct. 65% advance, down a little bit from days of yesteryear. Things got a little crazy back in the 80s and 90s, so 65% is the rate today.
And are producers taking advantage of this, and do you think that they should?
You know, right now a lot of guys are scratching their head about moving grain and things like that. To me, it's probably one of your better options for the simple fact it's a very good basis level, and, you know, you can core bins, get grain moving and still be open for gains or losses in the futures markets. Same thing would be in the bin, but at least you're locking one of the variables in with basis.
All right, and I believe your bids for the day are 368, up about 22 over for corn today, right?
Yeah, 22 over, huh?
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For 100 years, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
It's National Butter Crunch Day. And it's also St. Sebastian Day, patron of gardeners. On this day in agricultural history in 1910, Joy Adamson was born. A naturalist and conservationist, she documented in Kenya local uses of plant parts for insecticides, dyes, fibers, and foods. In 1964, the world's largest cheese was made, a 34,000-pound cheddar. It was created by the Wisconsin Cheese Foundation for the 1964-1965 New York World's Fair. It took 170,000 quarts of milk from 16,000 cows. It was eaten at the 1965 annual meeting of the Wisconsin Dairymen and Cheesemakers Association. And in 1998, American researchers at the University of Massachusetts announced that they had cloned calves that could be used in the production of medicinal milk. The goal was to mass produce milk containing human proteins important for treating human diseases by splicing human genes into cattle DNA. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Country Financial, now through March hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois. Topics include updates to both the federal crop insurance program and the farm bill, and at most locations, how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information is at countrycrop.com.
It's the 20th day of January, a Wednesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City is here now to take a look at the weather forecast room. Let's start in South America. They had kind of an up and down season, but I think they're getting a little better as we get through the latter part of their growing season, especially in Brazil.
Right, and the up and down is now upside down. It's probably the best way to put it, because we're now very wet in northern and center south portions of Brazil's crop country, while the south is drying down. This is exactly opposite of what it has been in recent weeks, and the situation is pretty impressive. Some of the rain totals in the last week across some of the center south and northeastern parts of Brazil have run anywhere from around 4 to around 12 inches, with some local totals between 14 and 15 inches. That's a lot of rain for one week, and there is flooding that's occurring, a bit of a threat to field work now, and some of the low-lying areas will suffer perhaps a little bit of damage. The good news is that most of the excessive rains are about done. We will see a continuation of frequent showers and thunderstorms across those areas. Southern Brazil is expected to also continue in its pattern right now for another full week, so temperatures will be working their way higher into the 90s and very little precipitation. Rio Grande do Sul is already running short to very short on topsoil moisture, but the subsoil is still plenty moist, so they can take this next week without a big problem. But it has to rain after that, and the forecast is offering just that, a chance for some precipitation about this time next week.
And how are producers in Argentina faring?
Yeah, the situation there has also become a little stressful. The temperatures have been working up into the middle 90s through about 104 degrees in central and northern parts of Argentina here recently. That is accelerating a drying trend. The soil moisture is firming up, at least the top levels of the soil are firming up. I think subsoil moisture there is also still looking very good. Another week of hot and dry weather is in front of them, but after that, you know, showers and thunderstorms are expected to evolve, and I think it'll be timely. We should end up with a much better environment for crops after a period of stress here. So Argentina, I think, is still poised for some good conditions. I will also stop for just a second, though, and suggest that central portions of Argentina, where the heart of corn and soybeans are produced, may run into a little less rain than the rest of the country, and we may still have some issues to watch a little bit more in February.
We have not talked very much about South Africa, but they are suffering a drought of historic proportions.
That's exactly right. It's been very severe. The month of December was just absolutely atrocious as far as rainfall and heat is concerned. The last couple of weeks, we've seen a little better evolution of showers and thunderstorms. The situation is getting better, but it's too late. Unfortunately, a lot of the crops have just lost a lot of production potential. We're not looking at general soakings of rain there, but the showers that do occur are going to be somewhat erratic and ongoing periodically through the next 10 days to 2 weeks. So the situation won't get any worse, but it's already pretty bad.
Hey, Drew, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
You bet. Have yourself a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Joins us on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You may always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.